All right, Revelation chapter 8 tonight. Revelation chapter 8. Melody, would you be my reader for me tonight? Okay, Revelation chapter 8. And as we begin this, I want to just, we'll start with the first verse. I'll have Mel read the first verse, and then I want to stop there and say a few things and show you the next slide. Okay?
And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour.
Okay, so here we find a break takes place. Here he says that he opens the seventh seal, and there was a pause and a time in heaven where there was silence for half an hour. Now, as you look at the little diagram here, it helps us to understand the seals. The seventh seal opens up the trumpets, and the seventh trumpet opens up the bowls. So actually, all of the judgments are contained in the seals because they're all merged in with each other. One of them opens up the next, and so it's all just kind of part of each other. But that helps us to see this. He opens up the seventh seal, and then there was silence in heaven for about a space of half an hour. And this is probably isn't a very nice comment, but some people have said that there couldn't be any women in heaven. There couldn't be any women in heaven.
No women.
No. Because it was silent for a half an hour.
Oh, I see. Oh, you're fine.
Anyway. I didn't think of it. I read it. So I'm not smart enough to come up with jokes and things. All right. So here, in these verses here, we're going to have Mel read verses 2 to 6. She already read verse 1, so 2 to 6, and then it'll get us going on this.
I've got a question. Just, how come it was an hour? I thought there was no time in heaven. I thought time was going to cease.
John was still on earth, and he said it was a half an hour.
Oh, he had his watch on.
And he said it was about a half an hour.
The important thing is, what was that half an hour for?
We'll talk about that. Yeah. All right. Mel's going to read. All right. So after you can ask questions after that.
And I saw the seven angels which stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. And another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer. And there was given unto him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense which came with the prayers of the saints ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. And the angel took the censer and filled it with fire of the altar and cast it into the earth. And there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and earthquakes. And the seven angels which had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound.
Okay, now as we look at this here, We begin here with this half hour of silence, all right? And God just tells us that there's this half an hour, and he doesn't tell us much about that at all. All those in heaven hushed because of the major events that were about to take place. That's probably why there was the silence, because of the fact God was about to pour out very severe judgments. And those that were aware of what was going to take place were quiet. Perhaps a half an hour of silence is another opportunity for our repentance. You know, as God gave them a whole half hour before the judgment started. You know, it may be picturesque. I want to believe that that half an hour was literal, but at the same time, it could be a picture of a space of time where God was saying, all right, we're going to give you an opportunity to repent yet because judgments are coming. And the severe judgments are coming. We'll see even after the fourth one here, he's going to announce the last three of these trumpet judgments and say that they are severely bad. Garrett.
I was just thinking on the time thing. Like, even though I know in a sense there's no time in heaven, I feel like there's still the concept of time. Like, time won't affect us like it does today, as in, like, we're getting old time. But at the same time, you know, if we could count and have, like, 1, 2, that still takes time. Like, I think time exists in a sense, but it doesn't.
Well, the big thing is that John was still on earth, and John was still looking at these things from a human perspective, and John was still addressing these things from a human perspective, and therefore he saw that there was a space of time, and whether it was a literal half an hour or whether it was just a type of or a not type's not the word I want, but a pause there for a period of time. Okay, yes, sir.
I think it's a literal half an hour because it's all to do with the 7-year tribulation. Things are happening on earth. They're opening the seventh seal, so it's all time oriented because there's a 7-year time period.
Yeah. And I don't think that there's any reason we should say it isn't just a half an hour. It says it was a half an hour, and he could have said a short period of time. He could have said a pause. He could, you know, but he uses that term. So we assume that unless there's a good reason why to. We ought to interpret it. Otherwise, then we would just accept it as he says. And then the seven angels stood before God having their seven trumpets. Right now, these trumpets, you know, you think about trumpets, and you think of trumpets in the Bible. And many of the times, the trumpets in the Bible, what were the reasons for them? You think about, there was, like, when the children of Israel were wandering through the wilderness, they used trumpets. And much of the time, see, that's another thing. You got to actually look at the Hebrew words because the King James Bible translates it trumpet. And sometimes it's a ram's horn, and sometimes it's a what we would think more of as a brass trumpet. And they did have the brass type trumpets or silver trumpets that they beat out with. And I don't know how they did it. I couldn't imagine beating that stuff into a. You know, in the shape of a trumpet, but they did. So in the Old Testament, those are two types. But why did they use them? What were they for? Garrett?
Usually like an announcement.
Okay.
Something's happening.
All right. So they were announcements. Now, think with me, in the travels of the children of Israel, when they're wandering through the wilderness, why would they need announcements? Garrett?
Because the crowds are so big, you need to let everyone know.
Right. But what were the announcements before? Generally. Okay, one reason was for there's danger. All right? Yes?
When you're approaching another land that's undertaking.
And what would be the purpose of that? To announce that we're coming?
Not for warfare.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
well, in the city of Jericho, they blew the trumpets and then the walls fell down. But I think the primary thing was for announcements of information. Everybody listen, there's going to be an announcement here of something you need to catch. The other reason is the call to war. Alright? And so, the call to battle. And these, you know, God doesn't tell us what these trumpets are here, but they're obviously announcing judgment coming. Yes, sir?
Many times they were both a warning and a call to war at the same time. Think about the two, don't exclude each other, because if you're going to be suddenly attacked, if you're not just warning the people, you're sort of warning them to get ready to fight.
Yes.
So it's both, it kind of does both things in some cases.
Yeah, and they had different sounds to their trumpet blows too. So that, you know, maybe, God doesn't tell us all the signals, but maybe it was too long and a short or something was one kind of an announcement, and three long ones were the, you know, danger. I mean, they were wise people and they were using these things for their good. But these trumpet sounds, God doesn't tell us why they are, but the significance of the trumpets making these announcements, I think, are important. Another angel stood at the altar with a golden censer. Right, now, what is a censer? Johnny?
I think it's like what the king holds. Kind of like
that's a scepter.
No, that's a scepter.
Sasha.
It's something that holds incense.
Yes, but it also holds other things.
I thought it held incense mainly.
Okay, so it was the censers were used to scoop live coals from the fire, for one thing, and they will also then will put incense on those coals and make them burn and smoky and the pretty smells. Sometimes maybe not pretty, I don't know, but it made smells. So there was incense that was burned on these censers. So the angel stands there and he holds a golden censer. All right, so it indicates that it's golden. That's significant. He has much incense with the offerings, with the saints' prayers. He offers it with the saints' prayers. Now, perhaps this is referring back to chapter 6. It doesn't say, but chapter 6 and verse number 10 says, and these are speaking to the saints, and they cried with a loud voice, saying, "How long, O Lord, true and holy, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth?" All right, so they're praying to God, God, when are you going to pour out judgment on these people for all the wicked things they've done to us? That could be these prayers of the saints he's referring to, or something similar. So he's referring to the prayers of the saints, the smoke and the prayers ascended up to God. You know, that's a significant thing. God enjoyed that smell. We read there in Ephesians 5:2, it says that Christ offered himself a sacrifice to God and a sweet-smelling savor to God. You know, I don't know how much you've been around burning flesh, but to me that's not very sweet-smelling savor. But God enjoyed it because of the significance of it. It wasn't so much that it smelled nice, but it was the significance of what was taking place. And so here, these here was probably smelled a little bit nicer because it was it wasn't burning flesh here, okay? And God is still a very long-suffering God here. They've offered their offerings and their prayers. And the angel took the censer and poured fire on the earth. You know, he took this censer then, and it's got the live coals in it, and he's pouring it onto the earth. And a picture of the judgment of God coming down upon us. Yes, sir?
Because I think Revelation also used the word bowl at some point, like the angel poured the bowl. Is it the same thing?
No. The bowl judgments are the ones at the end. They're called vials or bowls. All right? But a vial, if you look up the term that is translated vial, it refers to a shallow bowl. Yes. So why they translated it vial, I'm not sure. A vial to me is more like a vase type of a thing that you put, or something that chemistry uses. But these are actually shallow bowls that held the judgment. But the shape of it's insignificant, really. But we'll get to that when we venture on. All right. So he takes these. And he pours out the fire upon the earth. And we note there the violent reaction on the earth. Look at verse number 5. There it says that there was voices and thunderings and lightnings and earthquakes. How many of you have ever been through an earthquake? Peter and Ruth have. All right, Melody and I have. You have. What is one of the things that you remember? Not all earthquakes have this, but do you remember anything audible about the earthquake?
Rumbling.
Sometimes. Mel and I, one of the earthquakes we were in Madang. It was in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden it sounded like a freight train coming right toward our house. Just really loud. And then came the rumbling like this. I don't know why the noise. I don't know. Perhaps that's the noises he's talking about here. The word voice there literally means noises. It doesn't matter what the voice comes from. It could be the voice of a siren, or the voice of a person, or the voice of an animal, or the voice of something, but it's the sound that comes out of there. God doesn't tell us what it is, but I found that interesting that he mentions here this, the voices, the thunderings, the lightnings, and the earthquake. And
when we had the earthquake at Meckling years and years ago, all I can remember is standing in the front door with Brian. I don't think we have any children there. We were just standing in the front doorway, because that's where my father always told us, if you have any trouble, stand in the doorway with the door open. And all I could hear was people screaming. So that could be voices.
Yeah, well, that's a possibility,
because
too.
People were screaming because they didn't know what was happening.
Yeah. And it is a fearful thing. It's a freaky thing to just feel like everything
just...
But
we did feel the house was sort of...
So whatever the voices were, God knows, we don't know. Maybe someday he'll tell us. But there were voices and thunders and all of these things. Mm-hmm. Now, the seven angels prepared to blow their trumpets. So the preparation is all in, and it starts with the angel pouring out the fire upon the earth. And when he does, there's these violent reactions, and the angels then prepare themselves to blow the trumpets. And when they blow the trumpets, each one that blows the trumpet is going to release the judgments of God in those particular instances. All right? So next we'll read verse 7.
The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth. And the third part of the trees was burned up, and all green grass was burned up.
Okay, very significant things take place here. This trumpet resembles the seventh plague in Egypt. All right, back there in Exodus chapter 9, we know the plagues there, the blood and the frogs and the lice and the flies and the rain and the boils and the hail and the locust and then the darkness and the firstborn. So there's the hail. All right, now this one here has many resemblances of that. I'm not saying it's the same thing, but it does have similarities there. There's hail and there's fire mingled with blood. All right, this hail and this mixed with blood that's cast upon the earth. And the blood may indicate that the hail was so large and forceful that it shed blood of the creatures that it hit. There's lots of, God doesn't tell us exactly why this is it's mingled with blood. I mean, you could think of it, hail mingled with ice or hail mingled with water, but mingled with blood isn't, I'm not sure, unless there was blood being shed. Now, you remember back in the plagues in Egypt when the God told them, if you don't get inside, you will be killed. And a lot of them didn't listen to God, and they died because these gigantic boulders came down from heaven and just killed them. And there was many times through the battles of Israel when God would send down hailstones and wipe out the enemies. And, the biggest hailstones that I can remember is just a few years back when so many cars got dented full of holes around here. But we didn't actually see big ones, but there obviously were some pretty big ones to put those kind of dents in the cars. But hailstones have been known to be very large. And the scriptures say that there's going to be some that are gigantically large. So here there's hailstones mingled with blood in some way or another. And then he says that a third of the trees and all of the grass would be burned up. You know, you think about the massive bushfires they have over east, and we've had our share of them here. That's nothing. We're talking about a third of the whole landmass of the world being burned with fire and the grass being destroyed. The other third, not our third. No, we don't know. And I mean, another thing that's a possibility, and God's capable of understanding the dimensions of all of this, but it's possible that it was worldwide and portions here and there and all together formed a third. Yeah. It probably wasn't just the third was Australia this time and the next third will be America. It's probably not like that. It was probably dispersed.
Some people say that the Lord, this is just a saying, but some might say that there'd be a statement. There's three trees, one would be taken and the two would be left, sort of thing, in a way that only a third of the tree can make a statement. Oh, why didn't that tree burn, but that tree burned? And, some say things like that.
Yeah. So anyway, a third of the vegetation will be burned up during this time. Massive, massive bushfires and destruction. Okay? And then the second trumpet sounds, verses 8 and 9.
And the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain, burning with fire, was cast into the sea. And the third part of the sea became blood. And the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. And the third part of the ships were destroyed.
Okay. Now, as we look at this here, he says here, first of all, that there's this blazing mass of something like a mountain that is cast into the sea. We wonder, well, is it a meteor? Possibly. But the next one he's going to describe even sounds more like a meteor, so I'm not sure. Will it cause tsunamis? I mean, you think about this. Something big enough to cause this kind of destruction. What a tsunami that would make. I mean, this huge thing come plunging into the ocean and sending waves all over the world. It's going to be an amazing thing. But this thing's blazing and on fire, and a third of the sea will become blood. John called it blood. He did not say it looked like blood. God's able to do that. It wouldn't be any more difficult for God to make genuine blood as it would be to turn all the seawater into red. I mean, it wouldn't be any more complicated for God. Some people would try to say, I've read different commentaries I was reading. Some say, well, you know, it killed so many people and so many fish and stuff that all the... No, I don't believe that, because to turn the oceans red would take an awful lot of death. Right? So God said he turned it into blood, and that's what he said he did in Egypt, and nobody in Egypt... You know, there's no debates over that. Pharaoh didn't say, doesn't look like blood to me. He didn't say that. There's no indication that the blood that God did in Egypt was not blood. So I think that we need to just take it at face value and say, God turned it into blood. And we don't understand all that. And a third of the life in the sea will die. You know, as Mel was just reading it, a phrase stuck out in my mind. Here he says, in the third part of the creatures that were in the sea and had life. Yeah. I think, why did he say and had life? Well, obviously the ones that didn't have life couldn't die. So what kind of creatures don't have life?
Seaweed.
Seaweed, I don't know. Anyway.
There's no doubt about it that they were alive and now they're dead.
Yeah, well, that's true. That may be the reason right there. All right. So he indicates here that a third of all that's living in the sea will die. Now, once again, we ask, will it be the Atlantic Ocean one time, the Pacific Ocean another time? Probably not. I would guess that this stuff is going to affect the world, and it's probably portions all over. God's capable of doing, you know, the accumulation of it.
The third part of the sea became blood. People might think, well, if it stopped there, then all the sea creatures would have been ashed to smithereens. That's where the rugs come from. No, he tells us there that they had life in them, and then they died. But the blood was already there.
Okay, that's a point.
What does it say that we've got, 70% ocean in the world, that land-based ocean? That's a lot of ocean.
Yeah. There's a lot of ocean.
Mostly ocean.
Yeah, well, the question is it one third of just one part of that ocean, or is it throughout different parts of the world?
John?
Because in the judgment in Genesis, God did say that the creatures, we have to nostrils for life. So God was implying that not every creature has the breath of life. Something which is
well, that could be...
always considered that.
That could be what he's dealing with here as well.
Put every creature in the ark, only the creatures that have the breath of life.
That's a possibility.
Yeah, like I said, 70% of the sea, only 30% of that 70% is turned to blood.
Right.
Because the rest is land mass.
Yeah. Garrett.
The only thing I was thinking of as well is that because it's water, if one little section was turning to blood, naturally that's going to flow. It's that place going to flow. You know, the ocean has current. It's going to move around. So, yeah, I mean, it's easy to understand why it wouldn't just become in one little spot. It's water.
So it's possible that the actual explosion when it landed killed a lot. Then there's also the possibility that the blood would kill them. I mean, obviously these animals can't live in blood, so that would have killed them. But a third of the life dies. And then here he says a third of the ships that are in the sea will be destroyed. A third of the ships. You know, I just did a little quick research, and in 2022. A report states that there are about 58,000 merchant ships trading internationally. All right, so a third of that would be 19,033 ships that would be destroyed. Now, I don't know that he's going down there counting, oh, one more yet, we missed one. But it gives us a little bit of an idea of the amount of stuff that's being that's going to be destroyed by all this. So these ships... obviously, ships aren't destroyed by blood, so maybe the ships are destroyed by the explosion or by the tsunami that results or by, you know, whatever takes place. But these ships are destroyed by this great catastrophe. Now, a similar plague turned water into blood in Egypt there millenniums earlier, and we saw that. We've already talked about that, all right? So we know that those things to be true. Okay, any thoughts before we move on? All right,
God is able to do anything. When he turned the water into blood in Egypt, I'm sure that 7 or 8 days later they had water to drink again. So God probably just made it all disappear again.
Yeah, well, they obviously did get water to drink again. So
yeah,
God.
Otherwise, after seven days, you know, you don't have any water, you don't live.
Yeah. January?
It's interesting that the thing, if you look at the Bible, it's not in God's nature usually just to strike people dead in the sense of like just dead and they die. What God usually does is he uses the earth and he uses nature. God didn't kill all the wicked people in Noah's day directly. He sent the flood. He used the earth to kill it. And all throughout Revelation, God's not directly attacking it, but he's using the earth to kill it. And I think that's something that you see all throughout the Bible. But it's not out of God's characteristics to use natural
That's a very good observation, John Ray, because, I mean, obviously, God, all he would have to say is, all right, a third of you dropped dead.
Yeah.
That was the end of the story. But he didn't do that. He used, as John Ray pointed out here, used natural things. And why would you think he might do that? All right, let's just speculate a little bit. And from a human perspective, why might that be? Why might that be?
I feel like if it was that obvious that God would say, okay, you guys just die for no reason, you know, like, I feel like people would then just, I don't know, I guess be fake and say, oh, okay, God, no, I'm sorry, but he doesn't, you know, he doesn't want everybody to be robots, he wants people to make a choice, and obviously, I mean, that point is too late, but for people that, you know, never heard the truth and still have a chance, maybe, of being saved, you know, they can see these things happening around them. Surely they can think, hey, there must be a God out there and truly believe.
And I think that you're on the right track there. You know, I mean, God doesn't tell us, but it would seem to me, you know, there's always people out there saying, you know, that, or they could be the other way around. They could say, well, it's a natural response. You know, I mean, and all this global warming they're talking about and, you know, all this is, and it's just one of those things that happens and don't worry about it. It's no big deal. There was just some meteorite that hit the earth and it's done that before. That happened to be a big one and, you know, we don't know why things turned red and, you know, that kind of stuff. And they don't make all kinds of excuses why they don't want to believe. All right. So there's, humans are like that. They've been that way since the beginning, trying to find excuses for it. John Ray?
I think this might not seem like a legit reason, but it kind of is, because I'm like, and if God planned everything for his pleasure, so it is, I don't want to use the word enjoyable, because God doesn't enjoy bringing a judge, but at the same time, like, the earth is his, and he likes to do something with it. It's not a boring God. He has a personality. He doesn't want to just snap his fingers. He wants to use his creation. It's something that he meant.
Yeah.
You know, it's something he wants to use.
And so why he does what he does is in his mind and beyond our comprehension sometimes. Yes. Okay, Mel, you read Numbers 10 and 11.
And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp. And it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of water. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood. And many men died in the waters because they were made bitter.
Okay. Now, a couple of things here we need to note here. First of all, the great star falls from heaven like a burning lamp. You know, so this definitely sounds like a meteorite. Whatever that burning mountain was, that might have been too. But this certainly sounds that way. He calls it a great star from heaven. Comes down, and we know from meteorites, when they get into the Earth's atmosphere, they naturally burn. And so this one, if the bigger they are, they don't burn out until they hit the Earth. But if they're not big enough, then they'll all burn out, and a lot of them come to the Earth, and we don't even know they hit, right? Because they burned out before they actually got to Earth. But, you know, you look around some of the places here in Australia where there's these gigantic places where, I mean, you think about that. It must have been during the time of the flood when those big old things hit. But what a whopping thump that must have made on the earth to put those gigantic holes in the ground and where there's these meteorite craters. But God says he's going to send this great star that's going to be burning, and it falls on the sources of fresh water. Now, this is interesting. All right, so the first one in the previous plague or judgment was on the ocean waters. Now this is on the fresh water. All right? So this is specifically addressing the fresh waters. Now, that's, you know, I mean, how would you address the freshwater sources? You know, there, it's possible that maybe this thing breaks up on its way down and parts of it lands in a lot of the... Well, that's a possibility, ice caps. But there's also, I mean, there's a lot of massive lakes. I mean, you look in many countries, I mean, Australia, do we have any big lakes? I don't know of any. Well, like in America, like you get the five Great Lakes around my home state. They're massive. I mean, you stand beside them and the waves come in. You, if somebody told you it was the ocean, you couldn't tell the difference. It looks just like the ocean. Where's that?
At the Amazon.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the Amazon River. You're right. But I'm so there are massive rivers. The Nile River is a big river as well. There's several different big rivers. But the big water lakes and stuff, there's a lot of places that have big lakes, not just in America there. Gary?
Well, just thinking, again, back to, like, the hail. It says it was mingled with blood and killed one part of trees, which means on land. A lot of that would have gone into some of the water as well. Like,
yes.
Kind of contaminated it as well. So it would have made water already a bit of an issue.
Probably would have. Johnny?
I'm not a geologist, but I do know that a lot of water systems are connected. I mean, because if you actually, it's one of the reasons we actually dig wells, because this massive subterranean deposits all throughout the earth that are all connected. I mean, that's pretty well established. That's why we dig down.
And so possibly, I mean, this is just a wild, crazy idea, but maybe this meteor is so big that it hits so hard that it does go down there and break into some of those subterranean water chambers. That's a possibility too. Okay, I don't know. God doesn't tell us, but he just tells us what it involves. And he calls the star wormwood because it's very bitter. It's a bitter poison, this wormwood. And so whatever it got contaminated, it became bitter poison.
It might not even be a star that's in existence now. I mean, God made the stars. Why can't he make it this special one?
He could, but there's billions out there. He's got lots to spare.
It's interesting to note the word star here. Well, we don't even know how big those stars are.
Yeah, it's not an angel or anything like that. It's,
I mean,
it's probably an asteroid. Yeah. So a third of the fresh water of the earth is polluted by all this, and many people are going to die from drinking the water. All right, so it's not going to be a good time. So the multitudes will die. And so this is the third trumpet judgment. All right, and then the wormwood here mentioned is mentioned seven times in the Old Testament, where it represents sorrow and bitter judgment. All right, so there's various references. If you want to look them, you're welcome to it, or you can download the notes. But different references that refer to the wormwood in the Old Testament of the Scriptures. And so he uses that here again. Okay, now verses 12 and 13.
In the fourth angel sounding, in the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars. So, as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. And I beheld, and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels, which are yet to sound.
Okay. All right, so as we look at this, a third part of the sun, moon, and stars are darkened. Now, as you look at this, it may be an eclipse of some sort that extends a third part of the day and a third part of the night. It's possible that the third part of the day and the third part of the night is blackened out by something else, maybe not an eclipse. Another explanation is that the brightness of the heavenly lights will be diminished by one third. We don't really know for sure, but God says a third of it will be cut out. So whether it's going to be a third of the daytime it's blocked out, or whether the third part of the light will be blocked out, either way, it's not going to be good. I mean, can you imagine what our temperatures would do if a third of the sun was blocked out? We would be cold.
You thought you were cold down there.
That would not be a pleasant feeling. All right, Garrett?
What does the word smitten mean?
Smitten means hit.
So you don't
with something, whether it's literally hit or whether it's, you know, it, the word smitten can also mean you were smitten with illness.
Yes.
It doesn't mean somebody smacked you. It just...
Or hit with darkness.
What's that?
Smitten with darkness.
Yeah. So, yeah. So exactly how it takes place.
Nothing beyond gold. He could just take each star and take one third of the light off every star.
Well, he could do any of that. And we don't know exactly how he's going to do it. But we do well to note that these trumpet judgments are divine in nature, not human. All right, so each one of these we've looked at so far, these are things that God did. Man could not do that. It wasn't a matter of, you know, we look at our world today and people think, oh, sure hope nobody pushes the button, you know, and that nobody's going to start an atomic war. Well, it's not going to be an atomic problem here. These trumpet judgments are nothing to do with atomic stuff. It's nothing to do with man involved in it. God's involved in these things. Now, some of the other ones later on, man is more involved in them. But these, God was involved in. Joseph?
With this light thing, it would shorten the days for sure. If you shorten the light by a third, you shorten the day by a third. And it's funny because the Lord says, if those days were to be shorter, too long, there'd be no light.
Yeah. Well, that's
true. The days were definitely short. Go faster.
Yeah. Well, whether the Lord speeds up the earth or, you know, whatever, but it probably is that in some way God's going to block out. He says He's going to block out the sun, moon, and the stars are going to be blocking.
That done, and it's not something that nature has done. It's God that's done.
I mean, it could be that God could even send a huge smoke of some sort that would block out the light. I mean, there's all kinds of things God could do. John?
A lot of people don't notice, but our Earth's poles are always moving off axis by a few inches. It, you know, like, now we don't notice it, but it's so small. So at one point, you know, like, even like, you know, you go like 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, the Earth would have been slightly different, but still. So my point, though, is that we have a planet that is already on a very well-balanced axis. It wouldn't, like, God could easily flip that, and we could have, like, the climate, it could be way, I mean, like, if God did that, which He could easily do, it would drastically change our daylight hours, it would drastically change how we get, like, the cycle of seasons. Like, there's so many ways God could do that.
And see, even in that, some of the science creationism men, they speculate that one theory that could have taken place during the flood is that great meteors could hit the earth so violently that it shook it and actually changed the axis a little bit, and that would have changed the global climate. It would have changed the atmosphere that was around the world. And so again, as John brought up, it could be even something like that. We just don't know. But God says that He's going to block these things out one way or the other. He knows all about that, and He didn't give us all the details. And then a flying angel in heaven will call and cry, woe, woe, woe. And verse 13, Mel already read that. And he says there that the woe is an announcement of dreadful judgment to come. You know, when God says, woe unto you, and when Jesus said to the Pharisees, woe unto you Pharisees, you hypocrites, that was, you know, we just say, well, that was just kind of a comment. No, that was a very severe pronouncement of judgment upon them. Yes, it was, yes.
It's interesting, it could also just, it's always called like a warning, because Jesus said, like, I think there's somewhere in the New Testament where it says, woe unto the mother with a child and those things.
Yeah, like, this is going to be worse.
So woe isn't necessarily, like, it's just a warning of coming judgment. Like woe unto you, you know, like, there's something's coming. You know?
Yes. It's an announcement that something really bad is about to take place. Yes. It's something is going to be bad. And these three woes come upon all the people of the earth, and the woes warn of dread and of the next three trumpet judgments that are coming. And the idea here is that if you think it's this is bad, there are three more judgments coming that are far worse. So God is just warning us that things are going to get much, much worse. All right, now some applications. As we look at this, the trumpet judgments will be dreadful. Rebels against God will suffer for their sins, but even then, God's loving heart is longing for men to repent, and they will still refuse. You know, we live in a world where people's hearts are getting harder and harder and harder all the time. They don't want to hear. And you try to witness to people, and, you know, it's a huge difference. You know, we've been here in this area for 30 years now, and when we first came up here, the people's were much more open to the gospel than they are now. I mean, I could knock on doors, and most everybody was polite. They'd take a track. They would listen. That doesn't happen today. People are hard against it today. And there's still a few softies out there, and I'm grateful for that, but there's a lot of people out there that just don't want to know about God, and they have turned their back on God. And it's going to get worse. And we need to ask ourselves, are we warning the lost? You know, the time is running out. We have much work to do. And, you know, you have good news to share. And God wants to save people. We need to be faithful and active in doing what we can do. So the challenge is to each of us to be active in this. And judgment is coming. And those around us may reject our warning, but it is our duty to warn them. God wants us to warn them. And then it reminds us of Paul's statement there in Acts 20, verses 26 and 27, where he says, I am pure from the blood of all men, for I have not shunned to declare unto you all the counsel of God. We need to be courageous and speak out. You know, I can't say that. Paul is an amazing man. I mean, God allowed him to say that, so I know he wasn't lying. But for Paul to say, I am pure from the blood of all men. I've not shunned to declare unto you all the counsel of God. Wow. I mean, I couldn't even say that about our own little neighborhood, let alone the whole country or the whole state. But Paul said boldly that he had gone through and preached the gospel and let everybody know. So it's an amazing thing. And he was a man of great abilities, but God here is encouraging us to speak out.